Once upon a time, there were four little rabbits.
How old are you, Johnny? She asked.
16.
We few, we happy few, we band of brothers.
It was the best of times. It was the worst of times.
A wise old king once said, "Of the making of books, there is no end." How true today. Of the overabundance of writing published each year, what's worth reading? The answer is simple. Read only the best. Come join the discussion on Just the Best Literature.
Hello again, everyone. Thanks for listening in today. Well, I have no comments, and again, I always think that could be a good thing sometimes. But on our last several programs, special guest Jude Fleury was able to assist me in discussing several essays by Charles Krauthammer. And we had such a good time. I think we can look forward to another visit from Jude sometime in the future. Now, I am taping this program the day before most Americans will be celebrating Thanksgiving Day. Our college students are on Thanksgiving break. My partner in literature is at home baking pies and getting prepared to host a dinner for 15 people, including three grandkids, our daughter and son-in-law, and five college students not traveling home for the holiday. So yes, I am at work. But remember, everybody out there, this is work that I love, so it's really not like work. Anyway, reading and teaching literature is a passion for me, so if I'm not doing that, I'm not as happy. And so I am happy and I am working. Now, for today's program, I thought, since it is the kind of holiday season, that I would discuss several of Mr. Krauthammer's lighter and more humorous essays on a subject that I think is really readily identifiable to most Americans. And I'm going to call these programs Krauthammer on Pets, but more specifically, dogs. Now, doing this will keep me from working too hard, believe me. So if you have your book handy, I'm going to begin today on page 58. And the title of this essay is Of Dogs and Men. Now, all of you literature buffs out there, this might sound a little bit familiar to you. It is a play on John Steinbeck's novella Of Mice and Men. Now, that famous novella is about migrant workers hunting for work during the Great Depression. Now, to be honest, John Steinbeck lifted that expression from Robert Burns' poem titled To a Mouse. So I think it really does show that how well-read Charles Krauthammer was. So obviously, writers that write and writers that read a lot of other writers, they borrow expressions. So Of Dogs and Men, he's borrowed that from some pretty famous writers. Let me start reading to you from paragraph one. This is Of Dogs and Men. This is his essay. It says, the way I see it, dogs had this big meeting. Oh, yeah, maybe 20,000 years ago. A huge meeting. An international convention with delegates from everywhere. And that's when they decided that humans were the up-and-coming species and dogs were going to throw their lot in with them. Now, the decision was obviously not unanimous. The wolves and the dingoes walked out in protest. So if you look at what Steinbeck did in his novel, I mean, he compared these migrant workers to mice. And if you look at Robert Burns, he was also doing this comparison. So I think we could probably look at this essay as being pretty close to maybe a small version of Animal Farm by George Orwell. And so with Krauthammer, we have to realize he's really catchy and getting our attention. But there's probably more to the story than just dogs, and we'll talk about this as we go. I think Krauthammer is just really creative. He's a very colorful storyteller, and he does draw us in. If you look at that last sentence there, the wolves and dingoes walked out in protest. I could be taking it a little too far. I think he's getting a little bit like George Orwell in Animal Farm. And remember, Animal Farm, George Orwell used animals to represent humans involved in the Bolshevik Revolution. So I'm not saying he's going that far. But certainly I think we could look at wolves and dingoes walking out in protest to be kind of very similar to what's happening a lot today that we see on the news. But anyway, I think that's funny that here the majority of the dogs decided, hey, we're going to make our lot with human beings. And then the wolves and the dingoes said, no, no, we're walking out in protest. We're not going to submit to this. And so I think it's funny then, the next paragraph he goes on, now Katz had an even more negative reaction. He said, when they heard the news, they called their own meeting, in Paris, of course, to denounce canine subservience to the human hyperpower. So my wife and I, we love dogs and cats, and so we can see that obviously Krauthammer has studied dogs and cats because he can see the difference. Now, I think it's hilarious, and he'd probably be called a racist today for saying that the cats went to Paris, but we have to be, we have to just be a little bit humorous and see there is some similarities there. But he said their manifesto, now talking about cats, he says their manifesto, and he calls it La Condition Feline, can be still found in provincial bookstores. So we have to understand he's yanking our legs there. I mean, there's no book, La Condition Feline, there's probably never, it would never be found in a provincial bookstore. But anyway, he goes on to say, cats, it must be said, have not done badly. Using guile and seduction, they managed to get humans to feed them, thus preserving their superciliousness without going hungry. So if you know anything about a cat, you could probably get a good understanding of the word supercilious. Now, let me just give you the definition in case you don't know what that is offhand. And I always recommend to my students, look, when you read anything, have a dictionary right there and don't skip over the words. So anyway, the word supercilious means behaving or looking as though one thinks one is superior to others. And so we've had our cats over the years, and they definitely think they're better than everything else. There's no doubt about it. So, but yet, they still get us to feed them, and I think that's really hilarious. Now, he goes on to say, a neat trick, dogs being guileless, signed and delivered. It was the beginning of a beautiful friendship. So he's kind of hinting that, you know, cats are, they take your food, but they might not be the most friendly beast along with humans. Again, I just think the opening of this is just really creative, and it really, really got my attention. Now, of course, he goes on. You know, he's weaving us in, and I think he's trying to make a point here at the end. He goes on now. This is still page 58. This is more like in the middle of the page. He says, I must admit that I've been slow to warm to dogs. A couple programs ago, we talked about him. You know, he was paralyzed from the neck down. He did have a beautiful wife, and he does have a son. I did not grow up in a family that was not warm to dogs. My father loved dogs. My mother loved dogs. My brothers and sisters loved dogs, so we always had a dog around. But he said, I grew up in a non-pet-friendly home. And he goes on to explain why. Charles Krauthammer has such a great sense of humor. He's definitely Jewish. And, of course, he's had to deal with anti-Semitism, you know, in his life. He goes on to say here, dogs did not figure prominently in Jewish immigrant households. So he's not afraid to admit that, you know, he's Jewish. He says, my father was not very high on pets. Now, he wasn't hostile. He just saw them as superfluous and encumbrance. He said, when the Cossacks are chasing you around Europe, you need to travel light. So I know that, you know, over the years, we've had to travel with dogs. We had a yellow lab one time, and we had to move from the state of New York to the state of Georgia. And I remember we packed up all of our things, and we put them in a rental van. And my wife and kids drove in the car behind, and I had the big yellow lab on the seat with me. And so I can relate to this. And he said, but when he says, when you got Cossacks chasing you around Europe, you need to travel light. Well, we didn't travel light, and we had the big dog with us. He said, this, by the way, is why Europe produced far more Jewish violinists than pianists. He says, try packing a piano. So there he goes. He leaps from animals to violinists. And there are a lot of Jewish violinists out there. So he really has a great sense of humor. He goes on to say, he says, my parents did allow a hint of zoological indulgence. He said, I had a pet turtle. My brother had a parakeet. both came to unfortunate ends. So it sounds like the family didn't do very well with their pets anyway. He says, my turtle fell behind a radiator and was not discovered until too late. I crack up every time I read that line. And it just shows what a creative writer he is. I mean, I can imagine him sitting at his typewriter, or maybe he had to do it because he was paralyzed. Maybe he had to do it, with a microphone. But I can see him actually chuckling himself at this as he's writing it. He said, and the parakeet, God bless him, flew out a window once, never to be seen again. After such displays of stewardship, we dared not ask for a dog. And so that is the desire of a lot of children's heart. They want a dog. And I was just, over the weekend, I ran the Tulsa Half Marathon, which if you've been following me on Facebook or on Twitter, I've been talking about it for quite a long time. And one of the people we're attending with brought their little new puppy with them. And I have to admit, I'm a soft heart for puppies. And this was probably one of the cutest dogs I've seen in a long time. Of course, my wife looked at me askance and just, I could see the word no booming off of her face. No, don't even think about it. All right. Now, he does go on, and he does talk about, in this essay, how he did get, introduced to pets. And this is really says a lot about his family and himself. So, again, this is at the very bottom of page 58. He says, my introduction to the wonder of dogs, and I think that's a really nice expression, the wonder of dogs. And he says, it came from my wife, Robin. Now, my wife and I we talked about the fact that Charles Krauthammer rarely talked about his accident. And I know even when he was a commentator for Fox, they would always film him in such a way that it did not look like he was, really had his head braced in a, in his wheelchair. And so he was able to marry and he was able to have a son. But his wife, as he says here in this essay, is Australian. He said she's Australian, and Australia, as lovingly recounted in Bill Bryson's In a Sunburned Country, and I've read parts of that book. It is really a fun book. I visited Australia twice. I have a daughter that's married to an Australian, and we have grandchildren that we like to say are half Australian, but they always consider themselves, thankfully, full American. So we like that as well. But Bill Bryson's book is really a great book to read. But he goes on to say he has the craziest, wildest, deadliest, meanest animals on the planet. And that is really true. You've got to walk circumspectly when you go into Australia. The spiders can kill you. The snakes can definitely kill you. And even some of the plants look dangerous enough that they could kill you. But anyway, he said, in a place where every spider and squid can take you down faster than a sucker punch boxer, you cherish niceness in the animal kingdom. And they don't come nicer than dogs. He opens it up with all these funny things about dogs, but he's gradually letting us know what he really thinks about them. And I know a lot of Americans, they really do love their pets. And in some ways, I think a lot of Americans kind of overdo it with their pets too, taking them to the pet, stylist or the pet hairdresser, buying all the clothes for pets, buying the pet costumes. I think that's a little bizarre myself. And he certainly isn't advocating that. But he says about his wife, Robin, he says, Robin started us off slowly. She got us a border collie, Hugo, when our son was about 6. She knew that would appeal to me because the border collie is the smartest species on the planet. So now, if you think about Charles Krauthammer, that is a really funny statement. He's saying border collies are smart like he is. That's what he's saying. He said they're the smartest animal on the planet. And, of course, he felt like he was probably one of the smartest commentators on the planet. And I would have to agree with him. And like I said, in former programs, we've used a lot of his material in our own material here at the college and then on thetrumpet.com and also with our trumpet magazine. He goes on to say, Hugo could, one, play outfield in our backyard baseball games, two, do flawless front door sentry duty, and three, play psychic weatherman announcing with a wail every coming thunderstorm. In some ways, he's being lighthearted, but he's also saying, you know, there are some very practical reasons for having a dog. And as our society degenerates, there's more and more people getting the big bad dogs. And I'm not against that, except when the big bad dogs get out when I'm running or walking in the neighborhood, and then they I end up being chased by them. So you know, he's being somewhat sarcastic, but he's also being funny. So you know, he really I know he really gave a lot of credit to his wife for a lot of things. And so we'll be discussing more of those things as it comes out in different essays as we go on with this series. He goes on to talk about his son Daniel, and this does happen in families. And he said, when our son Daniel, this is page 59, by the way, he says, when our son Daniel turned 10, he wanted a dog of his own. I was against it, using arguments borrowed from seminars on nuclear nonproliferation. So remember where he came from. He came from a Jewish family that was chased around Europe by Cossacks, and they had these disasters with the poor turtle and the parakeet. And so I can remember, even growing up, I think, you know, a lot of people that have big families, we had parakeets. And we actually got parakeets as a wedding gift, my wife and I. And that was a disaster. We finally, you know, gave them away. But then my grandmother had a parakeet, and we used to go over to see my grandmother, you know, on weekends, which some of us liked, some of us did not like. And she had a parakeet, and my next oldest brother was blamed for letting it go because it flew away too. Every time we went to see my grandmother, she reminded him that he let her parakeet go. And I'm sure my dad kind of disciplined him for letting the parakeet go. And then, about 10, 15 years ago, we were having a big family reunion. We found out it was not him that let the parakeet go. It was my oldest brother who lied about it. So there's another parakeet story that you know, I think all of us can relate to. He says, you know, he did not want another dog because it was like, you know, magnifying or adding to all the nuclear weapons in the world. But he goes on to say it was hopeless. One giant, please, Dad, and I caved completely. He said Robin went out to Winchester, Virginia, found a litter of black labs, and brought home Chester. Now, I love black labs. I love chocolate labs. I love, you know, the yellow labs. I've never heard a lab named Chester. They always have a little more sophisticated names. But he goes on to say, Chester is what psychiatrists mean when they talk about unconditional love. Unbridled, it is more like it. And so that is a unique attitude with Labradors. I know my grandson has his Labrador, and he really does have unconditional love for me, which is really good for me because not everyone does have unconditional love for me, and for good reason at times. But he said, come into our house, and he was so happy to see you, he would knock you over. He said the delivery man learned to leave things at the front door. So that's really a description of a lab. But now he goes on and gets his Krauthammer funniness going. He says, in some respects, and he puts a big dash, PhD potential, for example, I don't make any great claims for Chester. And so Chester, he's probably beautiful. Beautiful black lab, very loving, but he probably not really, really smart. He said, when I would arrive home, I fully expected to find Hugo reading the newspaper, not Chester. So again, that does tell us a lot about Charles Krauthammer. Remember, he even taught himself to drive his own car. He had a car designed for him so he could drive, and again, he was completely paralyzed. So he went to the office. He went away from home. He worked, and he came back. And so he did have the experience of being met at the door by Hugo and Chester. He said Chester would try to make his way through a narrow sliding door, finding himself stuck halfway, and then look at me with a total and quite genuine puzzlement. I don't think he ever got to understand that the rear part of him was actually attached to the front. But, you know, poor Chester, he's really, really getting picked on. He said, but it was Chester who dispensed affection as unreflectively as he breathed, who got me thinking about this long-ago pact between humans and dogs. All of you essayists out there, notice he ties us right back to the beginning. And he makes it sound real, like, well, there really was this this meeting by all these dogs. And he goes on to talk also now. He says, cat lovers and the pet adverse will just roll their eyes at such dogophilia. Here he's revealing that, you know, he really does love dogs now. And so that's really quite interesting. He says, but I can't help it. Chester was always at your foot or your hand, waiting to be petted and stroked, played with and talked to. His beautiful blocky head, his wonderful overgrown puppy's body, his baritone bark filled every corner of house and heart. He said, then last month, at the tender age of 8, he died quite suddenly. The long, slobbering, slothful decline we had been looking forward to was not to be. When told the news, a young friend who was a regular victim of Chester's lunging love bombs said mournfully, he was the sweetest creature I ever saw. He's the only dog I ever saw kiss a cat. Now, I think that's hilarious. He's the only dog that he saw kiss a cat. He said, some will protest that in a world with so much human suffering, it is something between eccentric and obscene to mourn a dog. I think not. After all, it is perfectly normal indeed, deeply human, to be moved when nature presents us with a vision of great beauty. Should we not be moved when it produces a vision, a creature of the purest sweetness? So that ran in time, June 16th, 2003. And so I think that's just a great essay about not only animals and how they affect our lives, but it also gives us a deep insight into Charles Krauthammer's family life. And, you know, animals do present a lot of, I think, a way of maybe gluing a family together or tying a family together. They do these funny antics. We did have two cats until just recently. I know my favorite cat, neighborhood bully cat, actually shredded it, killed it in a terrible, I guess, territory fight. And we do have a little female who's maybe not as friendly. And, of course, then we have our little dachshund, Phoebe, who's been around for about 10 years and she still likes to play like a puppy and gets so excited when I come home. So that's always really exciting. Well, I'd like to move on now to just a second essay that he has. It's about dogs, and I do think it's another almost Animal Farm kind of statement. And this is his essay called Follies. Now, this is on page 71 of the book. And so I think it really is just really a great essay. He has a way of really, you know, taking a maybe a lighthearted subject and making it look really serious and just something you have to read. And he certainly does this again with Follies. And there's a little subtitle under Follies. It's an essay on a dog. It's titled Follies, but the subhead is Save the Border Collie. Now, he gives us a quote at the beginning. It says, alas, not many British dukes are bred as closely as their poorest shepherd's dogs. Even fewer dukes are bred for accomplishment. Now, that's by Donald McCraig. He wrote a book called Eminent Dogs and Dangerous Men. That's all the time we have for today's program. And remember, now we are several essays into our new series titled A Tribute to Charles Krauthammer. We are reading selected portions of his book, of essays titled Things That Matter. Now, you can buy this book at Amazon.com. You can find a used copy of the book at ABEBooks.com. And, of course, you can check your local library. So please write me any comments you may have to jbl@pcog.org. You can follow JBL on Twitter @JBLiterature1. You can also follow JBL on Facebook. Simply search for Just the Best Literature. So until next time, keep reading.
You've been listening to Just the Best Literature on Trumpet Radio, 101.3 KPCG, streaming online at kpcg.fm and thetrumpet.com.